The individual, on the other hand, the jiva, jiva is not ahambhava. Jiva is a real individual, an entity, which is finite, but which does not regard itself to be self-existent, which does not regard itself to be independent of all the others. When you enter into the true individual consciousness, it always finds itself to be dependent upon the Supreme. Therefore, there is no egoism in it. It is a sense of liberation which comes to you by unity with the Supreme. This is the second kind of moksha. Moksha is of two kinds. Moksha by self-knowledge, in which you enter into the immobility of the self, or you realize the individual's dependence upon the Supreme. And when you recover this dependence on the Supreme, ego falls away, but the individual remains united with the Supreme. This is another experience of moksha. This second process of moksha is often connected with what is called bhakti yoga. The individual attains to unity with the Supreme by uniting, and therefore by surrendering, by dependence on the Supreme. Now this dependence is also a part of karma yoga, because in karma yoga also there is the element of offering, sacrifice, and ultimately union with the divine, even though you may be acting in the world. So unity with the divine and moksha by unity with the divine is obtained both by karma yoga and by bhakti yoga. Moksha by self-knowledge is obtained by jnana yoga. These are the three paths, and this is the result ultimately that we obtain. And all the three paths are accepted in the Bhagavad Gita. That is why Bhagavad Gita's liberation is not one-sided. It is both ways, by unity and by self-knowledge. And therefore it is called an integral liberation. It is not only liberation by self-knowledge, but also liberation by union with the divine. Now, when you have the process of unity, then the totality of the divine, not only in his aspect of self-knowledge, but as one who unites both staticity and dynamism, is realized. Therefore, to realize the divine as both static and dynamic, divine as a supporter in whom you can seek your dependence, the divine as a doer of action through whom, who inspires your action, who acts through you. When all the three realizations come together, that is an integral realization of the divine and integral moksha. You then have another side of moksha, which also arises out of this integral realization. After the state of moksha which is reached by self-knowledge and unity, what happens to para-prakriti? According to one view, para-prakriti vanishes because it was illusion as a whole. And it no more remains. Body, life, mind, ego, all of them are destroyed and nothing remains. There is only one Supreme Brahman which is immobile. This is one view. The other view is that para-prakriti is not alone, but there is also para-prakriti, And Paraprakriti is at the root of Aparaprakriti. Now, if it is at the root of Aparaprakriti, then there is a possibility of something of Aparaprakriti getting joined with this Paraprakriti. According to the Bhagavad Gita, this is what begins to happen. The Aparaprakriti itself gets so transformed that Aparaprakriti as Aparaprakriti does not remain. But whatever truth was there in the Aparaprakriti gets transmuted into the higher truth of Paraprakriti. Now, when we speak of integral liberation, this also is included in the integral liberation. The liberation of Aparaprakriti from its own limitations into the perfection of the Paraprakriti. Moksha, therefore, is threefold. Moksha by self-knowledge, moksha by unity, and moksha by the liberation of the limitations of Aparaprakriti by entering into Paraprakriti. Now, when you enter into Paraprakriti, there are stages of development. And when Aparaprakriti becomes completely transformed into Paraprakriti, it is called complete perfection. Not only liberation, but also perfection. Now, these terms are necessary to remember because throughout, from chapter number 7 to 18, we shall be revolving around this process of mukti by self-knowledge, mukti by unity, mukti by liberation of the Aparaprakriti into Paraprakriti, and perfection that can be attained by transforming fully Aparaprakriti into Paraprakriti. From chapter number 13 to chapter number 18 is given to this last process. What is Aparaprakriti and how this Aparaprakriti be so trained that there is a transformation available at the highest peaks of Paraprakriti. This in substance is the summary of the entire process of moksha and what is given in the Bhagavad Gita, in which we have a complete synthesis of the path of knowledge, path of devotion, path of action, and the path of self-perfection, how all of them are united. Now, I would like to read with you two passages just to conclude on this very important subject, so that everything in our consciousness becomes completely fixed. So I brought with me two passages. They are taken from the synthesis of yoga to describe this entire process of moksha. What exactly is moksha? And what is the experience that you experience when there is moksha?